Last week we took text number 2, in which we understood how a person, when not self-controlled, what he leads himself into. So if you remember, last week we discussed how ati ahar leads into ati prayas and how ati prayas leads into greed. And we understood ahar is for all the five senses. Ahar is for the eyes, for the nose, for the tongue, for the skin. And when a person is desiring, when he's greedy, to just get more and more sense objects for the senses, then he has to do atiprayas. Atiprayas means over endeavor. So over indulgence in sense enjoyment results in over endeavor, which makes a person into a greedy person. So that Rupa Goswami further says that what that greed leads into, that greed leads into imbalanced life. And if you remember, we had told you that we'll be discussing today that how to balance our life. What is the importance of balancing? Interesting topic. Many times this question is one of the hot questions, that when it comes to spirituality and materiality, how to balance both of them? How to balance our material life and the spiritual life which you are talking about. So today we shall see from the light of Sri Upadeshamrit, Rupa Goswami's nectar of instruction, how we can balance both our material and spiritual. And before discussing about that, we'll take a very popular verse from the Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna in the sixth chapter, I have discussed few times about this particular chapter from the Gita. What is it entitled? Dhyana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. It specifically talks about the mechanical process, you know, the pranayama and all that, you know, features of yoga. So this chapter, Krishna, one of the very famous verses from this chapter, Krishna says, Yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapna avabodhasya yoga bhavati dukkha. He is talking about yoga, that a person who wants to mitigate material pains, dukkha, dukkha means misery, ha means to mitigate material miseries. So one who has situated himself in some yoga system, who wants to mitigate his material misery, what he should be doing. And Krishna is very categorical here, saying that he should be regulated, or in other words, as we are discussing tonight, balanced. He should be balanced in what activities? In his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work. Which means, the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjun because Arjun, he was imbalanced. He was going towards the extremes. What was the extreme? He wanted to just give up the whole show and just wanted to live on begging. Arjun, first of all, such a great warrior, he was the number one warrior of Dwapara Yuga. And that too on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. If it was some other time, you know, like no war taking place, and if that time, you know, if Arjun decided that, you know, I want to resign from the army, you have Colonel sir. So, you know, imagine somebody just resigning during peacetime. That's okay. But, you know, during the war time, if somebody goes to, you know, the commander-in-chief and says that, the commander-in-chief is ready to give orders now, that you have to go at this front and fight, and you say, but I have brought my resignation. What to speak, you know? Even if you go with a leave application, that will be rejected. What to speak of taking, you know, a resignation, asking for resignation. So here was Arjun, you know, the topmost warrior, and we are talking about maybe some, you know, puny soldiers. Here is the commander-in-chief, the commander general, he is saying, I want to quit. So this was a very, very serious situation. Great crisis here. So Arjun was going into extremes, that from being or supposed to be a responsible warrior, Arjun was going to the extreme of just giving up everything and just living on begging. Something too radical, something too revolutionary, or rather something too controversial. That was what Arjun was planning. So imbalance. So in Arjun's situation, what we see is imbalance. And the whole Gita is nothing but trying to balance Arjun. And balance Arjun in what? Not externally. As we have discussed that Arjun externally was not imbalanced. It was not that externally Arjun became weak and feeble and feverish, sick. No, internally. All the sickness and weakness was internal weakness and sickness. So the whole balancing, what lesson which we have to learn is, we have to learn it from inside, inside out. So herein Krishna is speaking from or through Arjun, he is speaking to all of us, that if we also want to advance spiritually, if we also want to mitigate our dukkha, means to vanquish, to mitigate means to get rid of. So Krishna is saying that we have to begin with this balancing. So we will discuss more in detail that what this principle of balancing has been given so much importance. So herein, why I took this verse from Gita, because now we have a basis for our discussion. That we are not just discussing about some balancing from somewhere, from the blues. We are basing our discussion now from what Krishna is wanting all of us to do. Krishna wants us to be having the moderate path, not the extremes. The moderate path, the balanced approach. Now, in yoga, now generally we understand yoga to be the physical exercises. Even in that, even if you take the physical exercises, if you have some experience of doing yoga personally or heard about it or seen it, what is yoga? Balancing. Yoga means one has to balance one's life airs. One has to balance one's, you know, bodily structures and limbs, and you know, it's all about balancing. One of the major components of the physical yoga also is to balance. How many of you have done yoga in your life? How many of you are doing yoga? Some kind of yoga? You must have heard or seen, you know, television nowadays, so much of that is going on. So it means you will see, you know, all these asanas, how sometimes these asanas, you go through, you know, thumb through a yoga book, and you'll see that such asanas, it appears to be as if it's humanly possible. The legs are going from here till here, everywhere. The hands are going somewhere from, you don't know where the hands is coming out from where it's going in. So sometimes when you see, it appears to be humanly impossible. You see? But it is nothing but a certain practice which one gives to the body. in regards to balancing. And it's nothing but balancing. So, when you talk about yoga, yoga means the art of balancing. Then, good health, according to Ayurveda. If you know anything about Ayurveda, according to Ayurveda, Ayurveda is nothing but trying to balance the, not the masala dosha. Don't think this dosha means, you know, what we generally know of, you know, in a restaurant, South Indian restaurants. Eh? So, the three doshas. Anyone knows what are the three doshas? Yes, kapha, vata, pitta. These are the three doshas within our body. And we become sick when? When there is imbalance. When there is imbalance in even in one of these doshas, if there is more of kapha, there is more of pitta or more of vata, you know. So because of this, mucus, bile and air, these three means, kapha, vata, pitta means mucus, bile and air. These are the three components which determine our good health or bad health, depending on how balanced they are and how imbalanced. So therefore, herein also we see that even physically if you see the yoga principle or the health principle, there has to be balance in our body. I think also allopathy might talk about balancing. Yeah? Something's balancing inside. The pressures have to be balanced. The blood pressure, you know, so many other pressures. So, this is the principle as far as the corporal body is concerned. And herein you see, as it is compared, that human form of life is compared to like walking on a tight rope. As you see, this gentleman is trying to do what? Trying to balance. Now, many times, you know, in Indian villages we see those people, you know, small group of people, they come and they set up all this and they walk on a tight rope. They do so many things. So many times we are fascinated. My God, how this little girl, how she is able to walk. And sometimes, you know, she does so many things, holding something on the head and doing some feats while walking on the tightrope. So sometimes we are fascinated looking at all of that. Now, it's nothing but again, balancing. And sometimes you see that they hold that, you know, rod, the pole. They hold that pole. And that pole is something playing a very significant role for that person who is walking on the tightrope, holding that pole, how that pole is held. And what is the weight of that pole and all these different dimensions of the pole is very much important. So then, our human form of life is compared to now walking on a tight rope. If I ask you, if we tie a rope, you know, from this pillar to that pillar, and if I ask you, okay, let's have, you know, today's Friday program, we'll have, how many of you can walk? Anyone would like to try? Forget about this, even if I just place a rope on the ground level and if we are asked to walk just on that rope, not touching the ground, it is so impossible for us. It is said that human form of life which we have got, it's like walking on a tight rope. But how many of us we have become adept, we have become expert in trying to do that? Because again, this material world is full of dualities. You know what dualities mean? Duality means extremes. Like two sides of a coin. That's called duality. So you have heat and the opposite of that is cold. You have you know, happiness and the opposite of that is misery. So always we find ourselves in duality of this material world. So therefore, our entire life in this human form goes trying to just balance between dualities. Every day I become hungry and therefore I have to provide with some food to this body. I am thirsty, I have to drink something. I am tired, I have to sleep. So always
we confront with so many dualities in our life and we try to balance. And who is a successful person? The successful person is he who has properly balanced all of these dualities. When he properly balances these dualities, that person is called to be, he is successful. He is able to manage his work life and family life, and he is able to manage so many of the other things, you know. Juggling, you know, he's become a good juggler. Like in circus, they have those jugglers. So he becomes a good juggler, which means he's able to balance so many things. So therefore, understanding that human form of life is so intense. Remember this example, that when a person is walking on that tightrope, he has to be very, very focused. He cannot be just, in his own mind, just like a bicycle, thinking of something. That person has to be very, very focused. And when that person is very focused, only then he can walk on that tightrope. Which means in our human form of life, we have to be so focused. That is what is the point which we have to extract out from this example. That not just casually living our life, but as if we are on a razor's edge or walking on a tightrope. Another example we have. Looks good. Human life is also compared to honoring a wholesome meal. How many of you understood what this example is teaching us in regards to what we are discussing? A small riddle. Sorry, yeah? Balanced diet. How can you elaborate in that? Looking at the photo, also I give you a hint. Looking at the photo here, the picture. Are you able to see? Maybe today's menu, just displayed out. Balanced diet, okay, that's okay. But can you go in deep, more elaborate in that? You know, what do you mean by balanced diet? Yeah, all different kinds of ingredients, they have to be there in one's meal. Yeah. All kinds of tastes, like what? Okay, yeah, this is also a good way of saying that, just like when you have, say, like, sometimes, you know, you go to some restaurant, they have the thali system. You know, the special thali, 50 rupees, something like that. So, you just order one thali. And you know, they will not bring empty thali now. Then, you know, you order thali. You know what that thali will have so many things. There'll be, you know, some achar, there'll be, you know, like some lemon, there'll be, you know, dal, some yogurt, rice, chapati, papad, sweet. Huh? So now, if I ask you, in that thali, which is the most important? Okay. Well, that example is different now. So, okay, if it's salt important, but if there is the vati of kheer, will you put salt in there? So that thali which you get now, which is the most important ingredient in that? Everything. Okay. You like sweet. So you should have ordered then only sweet. You see? If somebody likes only sweet, then only sweet can be ordered. You can go to a sweet shop. But when you are ordering a thali has to have the combination, just you see the combinations of everything. So now, you know, somebody who likes rice, he will not eat simply only plain white rice. With that rice plate, you know, another thing in this sense. Rice plate. A rice plate means what? Not simply rice and a plate. A
Rice plate means along with that there will be some dal, some sabji. All these things will be there. So which means that just like a wholesome meal will have a combination of all these things. In fact, authentic traditional cooking will have the right amount of spices. Like, the best way to eat is the Indian way of eating. And in the Indian way of eating, you know, according to Ayurveda, there are certain things which you have to eat first. I think sweet has to be taken first. Yes? No? Maybe. Do you have any Ayurveda man here? I was told. No Ayurveda man. I was told that the sweet has to be taken first. Like, No. It activates the digestive juices. That is the reason. Like in Bengal. Yeah, Bengal is here. In Bengal, over there, the bitter preparations are taken first in a meal. Like, shukta. Right? Shukta or something. Why bitter preparations? Because bitter preparations also activate the digestive juices. So, because many times living in Kali Yuga, the kind of lifestyles we have, digestive systems are mandagni, always, most of the times, inactive. So therefore, to activate that, these kind of things, to begin with that. But if simply somebody is eating just sweet or, bitter preparation, that the whole plate is just full of that, there has to be combination of the other things also. So the spicing and the proper combinations of all these things, they very much account to whether you are eating a healthy meal or whether it is unhealthy. So therefore, our life is, if you compare our life to like this good looking, plate, then our life should have a proper proportion of everything. Say, our social life, our personal life, our family life, our official life, spiritual life. Every particular aspect of our life has to be having its proper designation and position for our whole human form of life to give us a wholesome life, just like a wholesome meal. So this is the example also given. This example sticks very much, whenever it is used, then it's very practical, this example. Tightrope example is sometimes not so practical. This example is very practical for people. Now, what are the things in this world which we balance? I have few things listed out, but I would like to ask some of you, opposites. Because balancing is, you have to balance the opposites. So what are the things, the opposites which we balance day to day, every day? Can you think of? Every day we balance the opposites in our life in order to just survive. For just surviving, we have to balance so many opposites in our life. Stress. I'll begin with something very, very physical. Sounds practical? Now if I ask you a very frank question, of these two, which is most important? Like, Srila Prabhupada would tell one story that there was one king named King Krishnachandra. And previously the kings, they would have a jester. You know what a jester would be? Jester was like a funny person. He was just there to entertain the king. Huh? Yeah, Vidusha. A comedian. So it's called a jester in the king's palace. So there was this jester of this King Krishnachandra. His name was Gopal Bhan. And there are many stories of this Gopal Bhan. That one time Krishnachandra
he called Gopal Bhan. Gopal Bhan was a funny character. So he called Gopal Bhan and said, Gopal Bhan, tell me, what is the difference between you and a fool? And he took one tape and he measured the distance between himself and the king. And he said, 1 meter. So like that, he was that kind of character. So this Gopal Bhan, one time what happened was, the king, he fathered a child. So he begot a son, and it was like a joyous occasion. The king has begot a son. The prince has born now. So everyone was celebrating, and you know, it was like there were festivities going on all over. So then the king, he was like busy, you know, everyone was coming and congratulating. So during the end of all these festivities, then finally Gopal Bhan, the king spotted Gopal Bhan. And he, Gopal Bhan, I didn't see you the whole day. And really feel, how are you feeling, you know? Just begot a son and the prince has been born now in our kingdom. How do you feel? Gopal Bhan said, sir, I feel today, right now you are asking me how I'm feeling, as if I have just passed stool. He said, come on, see, Gopal Bhan, you should have some mannerisms of what examples you use. Gopal Bhan said, yeah, you ask how am I feeling upon hearing this news that you have begot a son. This is what I am feeling. Just like, so the king, you know, said, you are a nonsense person. And then Gopal Bhan said, well, you just asked my frank opinion and this was my frank opinion. Now many months passed and the king was just, you know, he was on a boat ride. And in that boat ride, you know, Gopal Bhan was there. So, all of a sudden, the king had an urge to evacuate. And then the king told to Gopal, Gopal Bhan, take the boat somewhere, you know, back to the kingdom. And Gopal, why, what happened? Having urgent, some mails to be downloaded. So then, Gopal Bhan said, no, it will be too late, we are far away from the kingdom. So then king said, okay, then somewhere in the forest, take this side, it's closer, the banks are coming closer. And Gopal Bhan said, no, that side, deadly animals, I know this part of the forest. Deadly animals, you know, they will evacuate you. Okay, then take me somewhere else, somewhere, this is a big forest here. And then Gopal Bhan was slowly, why are you so slow? Do it fast, ride it fast, you know, all that. He was, you know, the boat ride, he was taking it very slow, and that side of the forest, oh, I forgot, this side of the forest is full of dacoits. He said, Gopal Bhan, take me somewhere. And he was becoming so desperate, and Gopal Bhan was making him more desperate. And then, you know, at the end, when finally Gopal Bhan, you know, he took the boat to some place, immediately the king ran. And then, after just 5-10 minutes, the king comes back. My God, what a relief. And then, Gopal, how are you feeling? So the king said, I'm feeling heavenly. This is what was my feeling when you had asked me, you know, that when your son had born, you know, this was the feeling which I had expressed. So many times we can also vouch for that, many times, we also, that is the Kaliyuga ecstasy. This is what in Kaliyuga people go in ecstasy and bliss, and so that, of course, this is what, you know, our material bodies are made up of. So, if we see that we have to balance properly, that the input and the output, both have to be properly balanced. If not properly balanced, there is ill health. So eating and evacuating. Many times people, when they are not in a position to balance that properly, then they find themselves in problematic situation. Like there was a friend of mine, you know,
he was like a glutton. Just morning, starting from morning till night, it was just the input. I would ask, where is it all going? And he would say, you know, I have incarnated to eat. Mera avatar hua hai khane ke liye. That was like the slogan, you know. Like he was like the avatar, or maybe the avatari of the person who is simply eating. So it is said that our body is like a vehicle. In a vehicle, if you overfuel the vehicle will not function. And if you underfuel also, the vehicle will not function. So therefore the vehicle has to be properly, appropriately fueled, so that the vehicle gives its proper mileage. Similarly, if this body is compared to a vehicle, it has to be properly fueled. Then only the vehicle will take us to its required destination. So this is one opposite which we balance every day. Sleeping versus wakefulness. Again, if I ask you, which is more important of the two? Now, yes, of course, when we are awake, we can do so much. We can, you know, work, we can earn, we can have relationships, so many things we can achieve. But what you can achieve when you are asleep? We are just, you know, sheer waste of time maybe. Just like a dead log, lying for many hours, not even knowing where you are lying, what you are, who you are. It's just, you are in, you know, some indefinite land. So now, if you compare the kind of things which you can achieve while you are awake, as against the things what you can achieve, at the most what you can achieve when you are sleeping, at the most what you can produce, maybe some snoring sound. So, definitely it appears that sleeping doesn't carry any weightage as against being awake. Am I right? Or wrong? Sleeping is very important because it judges. It charges you. Okay. Ah, yeah, just like you put your mobile phone at night for charging so that the whole day next day, you know, so the whole body is put on, you know, plugged in. The whole body is plugged in and getting charged up, so that we conserve enough energy for the next day to work. Therefore, it is said that if you sleep less, you become crazy. If you sleep more, you become lazy. So, again, the extremes in this we have to balance properly. So, sleeping versus wakefulness is another opposite which we balance every day. Work versus recreation. What is that famous proverb in our childhood we had? No. Yes. All work, no play makes Jack a dull boy. And there was opposite of that also. All play, no work makes Jack a frivolous boy. Something like that. So, yes, of course. Why are we working? You know, ultimately, a person who is working, like, you know, in Bombay, people, they work from Monday to Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, all that money which they have earned for the 5 days, everything is just spent in recreation activities. So, definitely, like if someone says that, you know, my work gives me enough facility for my recreation. But if he's spending the whole time in recreation, which means he's shelling out everything of what he's conserved for that recreation. So therefore, one has to again go, or again we can say that work life and family life. Many times, you know, say recreational life can also be the family life. So work life and family life. If somebody thinks, you know, if the father thinks that my responsibility is towards the family, so he only stays with the family 24 hours because I'm trying to become a responsible father. So the wife, you are responsible father or husband, get lost. Get lost and do something outside. Then only you will be able to take care of us. So then he realizes, oh, that means I'll be responsible if I go and work, then I'm 24 hours sit in the office. So, if he goes to these two extremes, that if he's thinking that being responsible father or husband means simply working or simply staying at home, both are extremes. Which means in that also we strike a balance as far as work versus recreation. Sounds practical? Earning versus spending. It is said, who is a successful husband? Who can earn more than what the wife can spend? It said that he is a successful husband. So many times if that particular thing is not going in proportion, if the earning is not going in proportion with the spending, then you see there is imbalance. So therefore earning, how much we earn. Now many times as I was saying that people in this world, they have earned so much, they do not even know how to spend that. So there are people, in US there are billionaires who disguise themselves, as beggars and go out begging on the street. Just, trying to get a kick out of their life that, how it feels like being a beggar. And then a few billionaires, they bet. Main kitna bhik mang sakta. And that bet is on billions of dollars. They bet on millions of dollars, but begging only for a few pennies here and there. So they have so much money, they do not know what to do with that money. So therefore, over there also when there is so much of him, and there is another imbalance that people, they want to spend so much, but there is no enough money. And that is of course very much familiar we are with. So we see we want to spend so much. I want to buy this, I want to get this, I want to have that. But no money, man. So then working hard for that. So therefore, again, when we are not able to strike a balance between this earning and spending, and I have added something to this. Striking a balance between earning and learning. Over here you see, even in the play of the words, the alphabets, if you just remove the L from what? From learning. It remains earning. So many times, we simply take up any education for what? How much money it will fetch me later. Aajkal software mein itna hai. BCom, BA, puchta nahi unko. Like I was in Atlanta and there was one family. The husband was software engineer and the wife was a nurse. So the wife said that my profession is more guaranteed than his. Because people are always going to be sickly. And by the grace of Kali Yuga, they will be more sickly. So therefore, my profession will fetch me more money than this guy who is into some software and all that. And so many things. The technology is changing it every day. So anytime, the technology might come up with such things, but the technology of this body is going down. Yes, Dr. Sir? So, many times we choose a certain profession always that what it will fetch me later on. Like in one college, I asked this question. That you have finished, your 10th and your 12th standard, and now it's the time for you to decide that which particular branch you want to take of your education, and you happen to get some magical wallet. Jadui. Kya bolte hain usko? Purse. Batwa. Jadui batwa. Which means, that it's such magical thing that no matter how much money you take out from it, it gets filled in with double the amount. So I ask you, you get such kind of a magical wallet. Which field will you choose now? And one person said, I will find out from what is the origin of that wallet so that I can get one more. from where it is produced and all. And one person said, I'll become a charitable person. I'll simply give in charity. I asked, what? The wallet? No. The money from the wallet. So then, you know, everyone had changed now all their plans. So which means practically 90% of the crowd over there, they confessed that they were going for any kind of learning, what it will fetch them as far as the earning is concerned. And therefore, George Bernard Shaw, he said that I don't want my schooling to come in between me and my education. He wanted to talk about real education, not simply getting a piece of paper, a degree, and then getting that piece of paper to earn many other pieces of paper, which means money. So what he meant was getting really educated, which means life education. So therefore, we have to be very careful also how we are balancing as we are going deeper into this human form of life, from the physical, the gross, to the subtle, that how are we balancing this opposite of earning and learning. Now, there are some deft examples in regards to how certain opposites which you see or experience in certain phenomena, and how there are these opposites not if taken care of, then how you won't get the desired result. It said, what determines the strength of a wheel? If anyone knows anything about the dynamism of that, it is said, it is the space between the spokes. You know what the spokes are of a wheel? Like a cycle wheel, you know, or a chariot wheel, bell gadi, see. So, the space between the spokes determines how powerful that wheel or how long lasting that wheel will be. Now, spokes and the space, they are opposite things. Space is something which is opposite to something which is solid, the spoke. But proper alignment, which means the proper spacing of those spokes, determines the strength of the wheel. So here we see how these two opposites of, you know, the spoky nature of the wheel and the spacey nature of the wheel has to be properly balanced. Are you got it? Then, what determines the beauty and strength of any structure? It is the space between the pillars. Now, you see that big palaces or mansions, you know, many times the pillars, they give the beauty to the structure. And they are the load-bearing pillars also many times. Sometimes they are not load-bearing, they are just, you know, for beautification. Now, when there is no space between pillars, what do you call it? A wall. So which means, when there is proper spacing in that wall, then you see that there is a pillar which looks beautiful. So over here, this example is given that the space between the pillars and a solid wall appears to be opposite. But the strength and the beauty of that particular structure is determined on how balanced that thing is. What determines the depth and sweetness of any music? Any musicians here? Huh? Yes. It is the space between two musical notes. Of course, nowadays, you know, when people, they are listening to such crazy kind of music, like this rap music. What is this rap music? One person just rambling without any break, no space in between. And the person who is hearing is spaced out. Because he can't figure out whether he is singing, whether he is speaking, whether he is constipated. So I always give this definition that rap music which I had heard first time, I thought that this person, you know, he's definitely, He's been constipated for 7 days now. And the sound which is coming out now from his mouth is recorded into an album. And that turns it to be, you know, rap music. So proper music means there has to be proper space between the musical notes. That gives it the sweetness and the depth in that particular music. So with these examples we understand that how the opposites are properly balanced in it. Now, one particular opposite which we'll be taking now as against whatever examples we took is these opposites: materiality and spirituality. Many times we become expert in balancing the others, what we discussed. A musician becomes expert in balancing the space between the musical notes, or an architect or engineer becomes expert in balancing, you know, the structure of something. We become experts in all these other things, you know, eating, evacuating, sleeping, wakefulness, work, recreation. But when it comes to these two things, materiality and spirituality, many times we find ourselves incompetent, incapable of trying to strike the balance between material and spiritual. How many of you feel like that? That there are many things which we discussed we are able to balance and have a considerably happy life. But when it comes to including some spirituality in our life, the bulb goes on. Hey, spirituality now? I don't think I'll be able to balance. Time nahi hai. Samay nahi hai. Ye umar nahi hai. This is not my age. This is not my time. This is not right now my designation. So many questions they come. And always it boils down to whether I'll be able to include spirituality in my existing materiality. So therefore, let's take up. Do you feel that this is the important thing to be discussed? Okay, should I go ahead? What are the myths about spirituality when, you know, somebody just confronts us, you know? Why don't you become a spiritual person in your life? So, what are the patent questions and the myths which come about? Spiritual life means I have to leave everything. This is one myth which people have about spirituality. That spirituality means you have to leave everything. Then only you will become spiritual. The second is, I won't be successful materially if I become a spiritualist. If I have to be a successful, hardcore materialist, I cannot have any tinge of spirituality in my life. So therefore, this is the second myth which people, they find themselves in. Oh, what will my friends say if I, you know, take this mala in my hand, if they ask me, hey, Sundays, where do you go nowadays? I go to Hare Krishna temple. And first of all, a temple. That too Hare Krishna. That too on a Sunday. Whew. Yeah, gone case. You know, he's really gone case. So, we would say, yes, gone case, you know. The case is gone now. Becoming more lighter in life. So, what will my friend say? What will society say? So, this is another myth which people, they get when they are trying to balance materiality with that. Now, how to tackle these myths? So I have few tips before I go into. Let's take the first one. And what is your opinion about that? I may have to leave everything. So how many of you are in the favor that spirituality means you have to leave everything? Everything is material. Okay, so nobody is in natural. And how many of you believe that being a spiritualist, you don't have to leave? How many of you are in favor? Now if I ask you, how do you explain that? I am a layman, I don't know anything. So explain to me that how will you preach to me that if I want to take up to spiritual life, I am a hardcore materialist. That what are the tips which you will give me? What? Like what? Yeah, but that, yeah, that I already have. Roti kapra makan. I have roti kapra makan. And I'm doing well with that. Why do I need to include this spiritual life in my life? And you know, which means that spiritual life means, you know, you have to just think about God, chant His name, go to His temple, hear about Him. All these things, you know, which means I have to give up all of my delights, material delights. I have to give up all of that. So how would you say that? No, you don't have to give up. So if I ask you, how then? How will I do that? How will I accomplish having both going on? What would you say? Anyone would like to give some tips to me? Here I am. Come on. I am a diseased person in front of you. Yes. I'll go. Yeah. Which means that you may have to leave your worries, you may have to leave your anxieties, your stress, which means when you become spiritual, you become
more happy,
you become blissful, ecstatic. Huh? Wow. He's gone, he's taken a leap. Yeah. Like what?
How?
Like how?
Achieve what you want in a materialist life and don't put extreme gifts and also include spiritual and balance it accordingly.
So, some example like, you know, say you are a student. So, give me, you know, from your point, as a student's point of view, that as a student, say, what are you studying? Engineering?
Engineering.
So, you are studying engineering. So, I include now spiritual life in your student life. So, how will you now see to it that this inclusion of the spiritual life in your material student life will help you? That's what my question is.
Spirituality will affect my life in another way. It can enhance my life, it can enhance my concentration and also...
Yeah, yes, this is a good point. That spiritual life will enhance his concentration. That by practicing, say, some meditation or some, say, mantra meditation or whatever, so that particular thing will help in his material studies also. Which means, say, spiritual life makes a person more disciplined. There is a peace of mind. If there is no spiritual life, there are pieces of mind. Yeah, generally. Yeah, that's what. Yeah. So, chaos, tension, pieces of mind. So because of that, you know, we are not able to focus. We are not focused. So yes, you are right. Yeah. Means you are marketing cosmetics for the material body, but the result of marketing that cosmetics you are using to put the cosmetics for your soul. Yeah, I know. But then, you know, in your marketing skills for your cosmetics, you can't begin saying that, you know, Bhagavad Gita says you are not the body and definitely you are not your face. And by the way, I have a cream for you. So, you know, if in case, you know, you are in the greatest illusion that you are this body, use this cream. You know. So you can't say like that. But definitely, as you very well said that, you know, you will market it properly. Give a very difficult example. So you will market it by saying, you are the body, you are the face, you this, and maybe the result of that you may use, you know, in something which is more sublime, which is for the soul, the cosmetic arrangement for the soul. Yeah, materialist. Yeah, so that's what. Over here, what we are trying to find out is that I am standing in front of you, I am a hardcore materialist. And you are imploring upon me that take up the spiritual life. So I am asking this question. Yeah, like one way or the other he has to leave. Like, you know, I'll tell you, this is a communist joke. Communism means, you know, classless society, that everyone, no God first of all. It's a very polished form of atheism, communism. So, you know, one British diplomat, he went to former USSR over there when the communist regime was on. So over there, the Russian president over there, he was showing that how successful we are because of communism. So he was showing the, you know, British diplomat, and then he caught hold of one Russian and said, so I'll just show you one sample. And he asked the Russian, see, if you have two houses, will you not give one to your neighbor? He said, no, definitely. And then he asked, if you have two cars, will you not give one to your neighbor? He said, definitely, I'll do that. And then he asked, so the British diplomat was very, you know, impressed. And then he asked, if you have, you know, two cows, will you not give one to your neighbor? And never. He said, why? Till this time you were okay. What happened? Because I have two cows. All of those things doesn't matter, yeah, because I don't have anyways. So, you know, like one devotee came to Srila Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, sometimes I feel like renouncing everything. Prabhupada said, what do you have to renounce? First you should own it, then only you can renounce. It's like, you know, I go to the State Bank of India and say, I renounce State Bank of India. Or somebody comes, you know, I donate all the money from State Bank of India to your temple. Well, never belonged to me, so then how can I? So, which means, in one sense, nothing belongs to us. So, what we can leave? Already, we have just got it. Say, we are tenants and we have just got it on lease from someone else, this material energy. So, here in how to tackle this first myth is a certain logic. Accepting A doesn't mean you have to reject B. If you are eating your meal and if I give you, say, you know, you have a plate full of everything, and if I give you, say, something more, if I give you some papad, that doesn't mean you have to throw away your sweet rice. I didn't ask you to do that. I said that include this in your meal. It will help you enhance. But if somebody, papad, sweet rice. Kheer. Sweet rice means kheer. You take that kheer and you throw it. So accepting A or accepting spirituality, no one has asked to give up materiality. You see? So therefore, if we begin with this logic, then we first of all come to understand that we or the statement is on a wrong premise, that I may have to leave everything. That statement itself is by default is having a fault. Okay? So therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he didn't say to Arjun, simply think of me. Or simply fight. You'll never find Krishna just saying that you give up all your business of fighting. In fact, he wanted to. So Krishna didn't say, he didn't go to these two extremes, that simply fight or simply you sit and think of me. Rather, he said, Mam anusmara yudhyacha, fight but having me in your consciousness. So herein, if you see the Sanskrit also, yudhya means fighting, anusmara mam, which means in me, in my consciousness, you do this fighting. So that is the proper balance over here, what we see in trying to understand materiality and spirituality. Then the second, I won't be successful materially. Now, what tips will you give to me now? I put this forth, this particular problem, that well, if I take up to spirituality, you know, like we were discussing, you know, I lose all my ambitions, I become like, you know, a Virakta Baba, nothing, no ambitions at all. So which means this will be a problem which I'll be facing. So how do you deal with this? Is it okay? Is it right, this myth? Is it reality or is it a myth? Then how do you deal with that? How do you tackle it? I won't be successful materially. You see the general... yeah. Yes, 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 we'll come to that. You just hit the nail. Greed to become somebody. We always find ourselves in a dichotomy, in a dilemma, that there is greed to become somebody versus fear of being a nobody. So we are confronted with these two emotions. Either we find ourselves greedy, greedy, greedy to get something, to become somebody. Or otherwise, whatever we have the fear of losing it and becoming a nobody. I saw on a t-shirt, nobody is perfect. And I am nobody. Hence, I'm perfect. So, one may try to play upon the words, you know, that, you know, yes, I might be fearful about being a nobody. Nobody is perfect. And then I'm nobody. So he is trying to become very humble. I'm nobody, you know. And therefore, I have to be perfect. So, as we understood the example, of the sharpening of the pencil. That spirituality is like sharpening of one's tools, like a painter who is trying to begin his sketch. If the pencil has gone blunt, he has to take out time to sharpen it. So when he takes out time to sharpen the pencil, what he is doing is, yes, the 5 minutes of sharpening might take away some of his time from his sketching. But it is giving added quality to that sketch later on. So people, many times, they land up in just leading a quantity life rather than trying to find out whether my life is quality. Or like the woodcutter's axe. When the woodcutter's axe is properly sharpened, he can cut in less number of time more number of wood. So therefore we see that spiritual life is also like that. When we take out some time for God, when we sharpen our intelligence, just like, you know, our friend said, that by doing something spiritual in my life on an everyday basis, as a student I will improve upon, because I'm sharpening my intelligence, my mind. Anyways, the student, in order to study something, he has to regulate himself. When the exams are on, he can't just switch on the TV and for the whole day watching some cricket match or some movies. He regulates himself, disciplines himself. Am I right? Still? Students discipline themselves? Something else. Okay. So, I don't know, new trends are coming out. So maybe people are studying with the TV on, with the cricket match on. Or there are other ways of passing the exams also. But I'm saying generally, when people, they want to pass an exam, they discipline themselves. Which means, spiritual life includes already a certain regulation, discipline, a regimen. So because of which, that person's material life will be more enhanced. So it's like the sharpening of one's tool. So this is how we tackle with that particular myth. Then we have the third one. What will people say if I start going to the spiritual programs, and if my friends come to know that instead of that party, instead of the discotheque, instead of the theater, now he's going, you know, to sit with crazy people, hearing crazy things and, you know, strange, rather than crazy, they feel there's all strange things going on, you know. So therefore, what will people say? It is said. It's a very nice quote. And please bear in mind that if you really want to be this, you can follow this. If you want to be a failure, then go try pleasing everyone. Just like we take the example of our student. That if you want to pass in your engineering, whom you have to please? Everyone? Your exams are on. Now, if somebody says, come on, yeah, Bollywood is spending crores of rupees for this movie. How can you be so disrespectful to the sacred Bollywood movie, to the Bollywood industry, and not watch this movie? Says, oh, I should please them. So then you close your engineering book and you go and watch that movie. And you come out of that movie and then somebody says, can you imagine this restaurant, how much money they have spent to make this restaurant? Why don't we go and spend some time? Please, you know, the restaurant owner. How you please the restaurant owner? By spending time and spending money. So if you try to go to please everyone, you will please the Bollywood industry by watching that movie. You will please the restaurant owner. Whom will you displease? Huh? Or maybe, you know, your parents are spending so much money and the engineering college and, you know, the professors and all of that. You're displeasing them. So which means there is no situation in our life wherein we can please everyone. The example is given, Mahatma Gandhi. He tried to please the entire nation, but there was one person he couldn't please. Shorten. So we can't please. Prabhupada used to tell the story that, you know, the father and the child. One time, the father and the child, they went, they had a donkey. So they went into the market to sell the donkey. So, you know, they had to pass through many villages. So the father thought, you know, that the son, you know, it would be difficult for the son to walk so many kilometers. So the father, he placed the son on the donkey. And they were walking. So the first village, as they were crossing, all the villagers saw. See, aajkal ke bachche rahe, pita ko chala rahe, khud ghade pe baitha hai, ghade jaisa. And everyone was pointing out like that, that, you know, poor old father, he has to walk. and the son is sitting on the donkey. So the father heard that. So immediately, you know, you start walking. And the father said, and as they approach the next village, the villager is in the end. See what kind of merciless father is. Poor child, he has to walk. And he, you know, conveniently enjoyed the whole life and still enjoying now, sitting on the donkey. So the father heard, are you? So then he thought, what we'll do? Both of us will sit. Then nobody will have any objection. So both of them, they sat on the donkey. And then the third villager, just see these two merciless people. कोई दया नहीं बिचारे घरे के ऊपर दोनों बैठे हुए हैं. सो नाउ लुकिंग एट द डोंकी दैट व्हाट रॉन्ग यू आर डूइंग. सो देन दैट कोई नहीं बैठे. बोथ ऑफ देम यू नो दे स्टार्टेड वॉकिंग नोबडी. एंड देन द नेक्स्ट विलेज द विलेजर सेड दे आर डोंकीज एक्चुअली दे हैव अ डोंकी एंड दे आर नॉट यूजिंग इट. गधे को साइड में रखा है दोनों चल रहे हैं. Now imagine what he did. He took the donkey, put the donkey on his shoulder, and then started walking. So finally, at the end, he realized, to hell with this public opinion. Like many times, you know, the movie songs also, Dunya jaye bhaad mein, hum karenge pyaar. You know, like that. They say. So it is said, public opinion is compared to a multi-headed monster. If we try to please the public, then the opinions which the public has is like that. Whether you are sitting on the donkey, damned if you not. Have you heard that? That if you sit on the donkey, there will be 10 fingers. If you don't sit on the donkey, there will be 25 fingers. If you do this, do that, anything what you do in this material world, there will always be some things, you know. So therefore, you have to decide that whom or who is that person whom I have to actually please and get benefited in this human form of life. So therefore, tackling these myths, we come to the conclusion that what Rupa Goswami is telling us is that we have to be balanced. That when we are properly balanced, that proper balanced approach in our spiritual and material life, which means balancing both of them, is going to give us the desired result and uplift us both materially as well as spiritually. So now, text number 3, which we'll be discussing next Friday. Text number 3, Rupa Goswami is discussing, what are the 6 activities which enhances now our devotional practice. So we understood in text 2 what are the 6 activities. Bhaktir pranashyati. Shadbir bhakti pranashyati. The 6 activities which destroy our devotional practices. And now Shadbir bhakti prasiddhyati. Now Rupa Goswami is going to discuss what are the 6 activities which is going to enhance and foster our devotional service. So then he goes into the positive, which we'll be discussing next Friday. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions anyone has? Yeah. Leaving everything, yeah. Left everything? I'm holding a microphone. There is a laptop. I have a cell phone here also. What do you mean leaving everything? Well, I have a big family. Such a big family. Yes, this question is asked that if somebody of in that category that, you know, he appears to be leaving his family. That's what Prabhupada also said. That I left my family to join a bigger family. Which means, what is family? Family means relationships. Family is not simply, you know, Panchamahabhut staying together. You know, Panchamahabhut, the 5 elements, you know. What is it? It's essentially 5 elements, you know. Like, if I compare myself with my brother, he is made up of 5 elements and I am made up of 5 elements. But I don't like, you know, interact with him because, you know, you are having the earth element. I'm having the earth element. So we'll interact, you know, the earth element. No. See, it is a relationship. And relationship goes beyond the body. When we are talking about emotions and these sentiments in, say, a family, this example, I'm just taking this one example. So which means that relationship goes beyond the body, which means it has to be established on the platform of what? Soul. So in that sense, even a dog is my family member. Even an ant is my family member. Because what makes someone a family member? Say for example, I and my brother. What makes him close to me or me close to him? Because there is a common father. Because there is a common father, there is a common mother. Therefore, me and my brother, we are supposed to be close to each other. But that is on the platform of the body. But when you come to spirituality, you expand your vision and consciousness that who is the common father of everyone? Krishna. He is the common father of everyone in regards to the soul and even for the material things. So therefore in that sense, the family expands. So which means herein, again with this example, I can say, you ask the question that I have left, say a family, but then, you know, I would rather say that I have entered into so many families and expanded myself and my own families. You see, like when a person gets married, he literally leaves home then. Not even the wife nowadays, even the husbands. Nuclear family, atomic family, subatomic family goes down. So therefore, when a person gets married, he lives more now with the wife and the children and so on and so forth. But do you say that, kya chhod diya, family chhod diya. Family chhod diya, se itna bada family khada kiya, wo kya? When a person gets married, do you say family chhod diya? Now what is that marriage? That marriage is nothing but expansions of one's relationship. You see? So therefore, if somebody is entering into a certain relationship on the platform of the soul, he is entering into a family. Very much part of the society. So in that sense, you know, I can't say that, in fact, I am more into the family life in terms of the soul. As Prabhupada said, I left one wife and say 3-4 children and I got thousands of children without a wife. And Prabhupada also said without the anxiety of a wife. So then Prabhupada, he also in those lines he expressed that, you know, rather than saying that he left, in fact he added on. Yeah. Yeah, the same question. What is that need? First define it. What is the need of the family? And define leaving. Both things we have to define. Just like you are sitting here. Where is your family? Which you are from? You are from Nasik. Huh? So Nasik Road, your family is in Nasik Road. Okay. So right now if I ask you, have you left your family? Yes. Physically you are sitting here. You are not sitting with your family. So physically you have left your family. But essentially, in principle, you have not left your family. Huh? Don't worry. In your mind, you are thinking about your family members. Okay? So, leaving doesn't mean physically now. Somebody might be living in United States. But consciously, he is living maybe in Nasik Road. You know, because of his relationship with the family members here. And somebody might be living in Nasik Road, very much surrounded by all the family members. But thinking about US, New York, LA, all these places. So although he's physically there, but consciously he is out of the family. Okay. So first of all, herein we have defined what leaving means. Then what need? We are talking about the needs of the family. What is the real definition of the need? You may give your family members what they need physically now. Okay? But you limit yourself, or somebody limits himself, herself, to giving the family what the physical needs are. But that is not all. We understood that we have, from the physical needs, we have the spiritual needs also to be catered. So what are we doing to cater to the spiritual needs of the family members, which is more important than the material needs? Because the material needs you can give to your family members only to what extent? To the extent you live and they live. But the spiritual benefit which you can give to your family members will go on for eternally, lifetimes after lifetimes. So therefore, if you define these two terms properly, living and the needs, the question is answered. Okay? Yes. He's a student right now. Yeah. That you are not his body, and what is the use of applying this this cream on this obnoxious body which is filled of, you know, mucus, stool, urine, you know. Yeah. So? Yeah, he can't say that. I'm sure he can't say that. But then, if he has to do something for his survival, he himself answered that. The results of that, the results of that he will use in a service which will help people to understand that what is the real cosmetic which they have to use going beyond. Just like, you know, say somebody is diseased. Cosmetic, which also means that somebody who is diseased and he gets some medicine. So he's getting the medicine only for that particular disease. But a real doctor will go into the root of the disease and will root out the disease. But in order to go to the root of the disease, the doctor may have to give some symptomatic treatment. So yes, in order, just like I did some programs for some Bollywood stars in Bombay. So over there, definitely, the Bollywood stars are coming. You know, I didn't start my lecture by saying, all of you are not this body. Well, the whole profession is dependent on their bodies. But it is something, it is said that you say the right thing, but if you say it in the wrong way, you have said the wrong thing. You see? But if you say the right thing in the right way, yes, definitely, eventually he may have to, you know, tell people what he proposes in his own personal life. But this is a very kind of a managerial question rather than a philosophical question. It's a managerial question that, you know, if he has to market his product, what he'll have to say. So definitely, like in spiritual life, we say that we are Trinadapi Sunichena, Das Sadhu Das Anandas. But if you are a businessman, when you go out and, you know, you won't put on the billboard your product. This is the ghatiya, most ghatiya product. Because I am the most fallen. And my company is the most fallen, you know. And, you know, if in case you feel like, you know, I'll be very grateful still if you buy this product. You won't advertise like that. So Prabhupada said that a preacher is lion at chase, lamb at home. So therefore, if you take this phrase, and Prabhupada said he's lion at chase, which means he's maybe, you know, saying things which might appear contrary to the principles of what he, you know, fosters inside personally at home, you see. So therefore, when a person is doing that, he is trying to bring the person whom he is dealing with like a lion at home. Then when he comes at home, you can deal with him like a lamb. You see, that's what is how judicious a preacher has to be. That a preacher, seeing the time, place and circumstance, has to administer the medicine at a proper time. You see. So yes, you know, the patient might be having the disease, but the medicine has to be administered depending on the capacity of the patient, of how much he can take right now. So therefore, we have to begin with something like that. Yeah. Yeah, so Maya Devi is doing it for someone to engage that person into sense gratification. So yes, you are acting diplomatically. A devotee may be acting diplomatically, but he is acting diplomatically for the right cause. Prabhupada gave the example that when the mother wants to give some medicine to the child, and the child never wants to take the medicine, what the mother does? Takes the medicine, puts it in a laddu, and tells to the child, laddu. What the mother is doing? Cheating the child? What would you say? Is the mother cheating the child? Come on, say. Is she acting diplomatically? Yes, she is acting diplomatically for the benefit of the child. Okay? So now, when that child goes to the college, and in colleges also, there are some people who get laddus, but there is drugs inside. And they say, laddu. They are also acting diplomatically. But they are acting diplomatically to take that person down. So that is the difference between a preacher who may speak something like that. He is acting like the mother who is administering the medicine put in a sweet, and as against Maya Devi. No, you are missing the point. I am giving the example. Not drug, the medicine, I am saying medicine. Yeah. So yeah, when it is required, if the child is ready to take the medicine, you don't have to take the laddu now. If the child is obedient, if the child says, yes mother, whatever you say, I'll take the medicine, even if it is bitter, then the mother doesn't have to use the laddu. But if the child is hell-bent not to take the medicine, then in those extreme or exceptional circumstances, the mother may have to use the laddu and put the medicine inside. So it's not a general case. It is something subjective, it's not objective. It depends on specific cases. Okay? We'll discuss later. Yeah. Prabhupada gave the example that material success is like having so many zeros. So now zero, even if you write it very decoratively, with very good handwriting, the best font, bold letters, everything, it remains zero. So Prabhupada gave the example that spirituality is like putting that one along with the zero, in front of the zero. So yes, somebody might be successful materially, but what is that success? How far that success? You know, it's like you know, a person who is living in, say, as a tenant, who is living in someone else's home, and he makes the house look very, very beautiful. You know, it's like, it makes us very, very posh. So anyone who comes who doesn't know that who is the real owner of this house will appreciate, wow, you have really made this house such a beautiful place. But that house, he's just a tenant. It's just for a while he has got that. So therefore, who is a real intelligent person who will, even if he has a small little room, but if he owns it, he is more successful than this person who has made a rented place into something very opulent. So this material world, this material body, material situations, they are all given to us on rent for us to use. We are all bhadotri. So somebody who forgets about his real ownership, which is that of the soul, and just makes this rented house into a palace, you won't call it success. It might look like success, but in the technical terms, it is not success. Understand? So that is the difference. Zero and one. Okay. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Krishna.